Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. Wade Gerstner back with you, joined now by Les Norman to talk Royals baseball. Les, host of Breaking the Norm on 810 WHB in Kansas City, and of course was in Beloit, North Central Kansas recently for the Men and Boys Rally. Les, how you doing, man?
Doing well, man. Probably just like you. I'm just trying to hide from the heat somewhere when possible.
Yes, it's getting a little bit more difficult with temperatures around 100 degrees, and it certainly has become difficult for the Royals to get anything going offensively. You got a few swings still in you, right? They could bring you back. I mean, they just haven't been able to put runs on the board lately.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that yesterday. The Hartford, the insurance company, was out there, and they're a sponsor of the Royals. And they were out at the K doing a special two-day event for a lot of their employees and customers, so I was able to be out there with Danny Duffy and teaching some of the adults how to hit off of a tee, of course, because, you know, the field's got to be ready for the game. And I put a bat in my hand thinking, you know, I just wonder. But then comes the realization, I bend over to tie my shoes and realize that my core strength is not what it used to be 25 years ago. So I probably would be a better coach than player, I think.
Okay, well, maybe they need you as a coach, too. Let's just talk about those offensive struggles. Of course, the Royals, you know, they traded John Jay away. He was a guy that was hitting the ball pretty well, not for power, but getting on base. And we know the Royals situation, that they're trying to speed up the rebuild. They got to rebuild the minor league system, and we'll get to the draft in a moment. But how difficult is that for a player that's part of a team that, one, is not in contention, 22-46, and then, two, when your starting pitchers go out there and pitch so well as they have lately, and you can't muster much offense?
Well, it is tough, but it wasn't without warning. I mean, we knew at the beginning there were grumblings of it. There were denials of it, and the media was trying to figure out, okay, is this really going to be a rebuild? The word tanking was getting thrown around a lot, and I'm not sure if that word is legitimate. I know there's proof that it can be, but this is the difficult time of the season where the rubber's now meeting the road, because as the first month rolled along, I think that the Royals were finally letting us know, look, we don't have the pitching, we don't have the offensive team, we've got stars in place, we've got guys that can help us win. The only thing I disagreed with was they were saying, well, we are going to try to rebuild a little, but we are still trying to win. Well, of course you're still trying to win every game you play, but let's be realistic. The Royals just have not had the firepower to be able to compete on a consistent basis, and they went on major losing streaks. So the warning was in, and now the rubber meets the road, and some fans are, whether they are on board or not, they're going to have to be, because now it's official. John Jay's trade marks the beginning, along with the draft, the beginning of what is a massive rebuild to get the farm system back to the prominence that it was so much in the early 2000s and 2010s.
Did you like the John Jay deal? Not in regards to getting rid of him. It made sense. He's a one-year contract, but do you like what they got in return?
I do like what they got in return, because I'll be honest with you, the only reason the Royals got John Jay was because of his on-base percentage. I mean, he doesn't run super fast. He's a decent outfielder. He's a left-handed bat that doesn't have a lot of power. He doesn't pull the ball very much, but you were just hoping for that on-base to continue, so maybe the Moustakas and Salvi would be able to drive in a little bit of runs. It was kind of a Band-Aid that was on a gaping wound, but it turns out that Band-Aid actually held together pretty good for a while. So I like the trade, especially in the sense I think the Royals had the great timing of it. He had a big hitting streak going on. His batting average was up over 300, and he was that perfect utility outfielder type guy that could really help a team that is pursuing the playoffs. It was just great timing, in the sense too that the better players like a Moustakas, like a Salvi, like a Kelvin Herrera, Danny Duffy, so on, those guys are going to be more toward the July deadline, because that's when you really know, are we going to make the playoffs or not? Are we really going to make that push? John Jay was that type guy where you had to get him moved while he was hot, because he was that guy that maybe for a team like the Diamondbacks was going to be jumping on it early to begin to slowly piece their playoff run together. So I like the timing, I like the move, and I like his timing of playing well, because now you get two prospects that are going to be a big part of the rebuild, and what we need is pitching.
All right, so let's talk about the trade market. And I think the Royals, they could identify certain guys they might want in certain systems. They don't necessarily have to wait to the trade deadline. And there's certainly situations where you look at a contender if they have a third baseman get hurt or a DH get hurt or maybe even first base, maybe Moustakas be an option at first base for somebody. I'm thinking Moustakas specifically. But if you've got a team that has a solid bullpen and their setup guy goes down with an arm injury, Herrera could be an excellent trade bait. How do you play this? Put yourself in the role of Dayton Moore, I guess, as general manager, because you mentioned you sold John Jay at a high level in regards to his value. He was hot at the time. Now you have an offense that's really struggling, and you get to the trade deadline. Maybe the value of these guys go down, but then again, if you wait, they could go up simply because there's an injury at a key position for a contender.
Well, a guy like John Jay is the guy you have to move when he's hot, because if he's the guy you wait on, he's going to bring you no value if he gets to the trade deadline and he's not doing anything. But if I mention the name Mike Moustakas, we all know what he does. He's a third baseman that can mash some home runs. We know what Salvi can do. We know what Herrera can do. We know what Danny Duffy can do. There are guys in this team that, regardless of whether they're hot or cold at the time, sometimes it's simply a change of scenery, but they're enough star power and they had enough statistical value in the past that they're not going to lose value pushing that trade deadline. Because who knows, in a trade deadline situation, you get a guy, maybe you're only going to use him half the time for a pinch hitter. If the Yankees go out and trade one particular guy and say they grab a Mike Moustakas, they may not start him every day, but they also know with the short porch and right field, they're going to be able in the playoffs to have him come up and hit some home runs. So there are guys that their statistics matter in trade position and what we can get. And they're guys that don't matter, that you're going to have high value no matter what they're doing. Mike Moustakas could go 2-for-50 over the next 50 at-bats or 50, you know, plate appearances, and he's still going to bring high value because he's not going to stay there as long as he's healthy. So that's not a major concern. I think that there are going to be enough players out there in the world who have enough high-powered talent that we are going to be able to rebuild this thing quickly.
I think we probably agree. Les Norman is our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs. I think both of us would agree with one another that certainly Herrera and Moustakas and Andre, of course, is already gone. You mentioned Duffy. You even threw the name Salvi out there. What would it take, you think, for the Royals to actually move a Danny Duffy or a Salvador Perez? Because, you know, Duffy, he's not old, but he's not, you know, 24 either. He hasn't had that long run of success as a starter. We've seen the flashes of it in a 2 or 3 month stretch a couple years ago where he was dominant. His contract isn't overwhelming financially for the Royals. Is the question you have to ask yourself, do you think Duffy will be part of this organization and be a key component, say, 3 or 4 years from now when you hope to contend again? And that's how you determine whether or not he's trade bait? Or do you simply say, hey, if we get an unbelievable deal that knocks our socks off, we got to do it no matter what?
Well, I think it's the second part. If you get an unbelievable deal that knocks your socks off, you have to do it. Because, look, the Royals are in a situation where they're not buyers. They're obviously sellers. They're traders. So in both the short term and long term in this whole rebuild, one frontline guy is going to get you two. Two frontline guys are going to get you four. And there's also the possibility of multiple team trades where three-way trades can get you one from one organization and two from another. So, yeah, in all likelihood, a guy like a Danny Duffy or somebody that is maybe your A-minus, B-plus guy right now based on his inconsistencies, he could still be around for the long haul. But the fact is you just don't know because, like you said, if you get someone that's really saying, we really want Danny Duffy, we know he's had some struggles and issues, but look, we've got a great pitching coach we think that can help. We feel like he can help us. We need that lefty kind of guy in our rotation, or maybe they move him to the bullpen for right now and then let him go as a free agent after that's over with or after his contract's up. Anything can happen in that situation. I think if you're serious about the rebuild, when someone offers you a blockbuster deal, you absolutely, unequivocally take it. Do I think you completely clean house? No, and which I think that's why Salvi is maybe the least likely, but it's also not an impossible situation because Salvi is 260 pounds. Every time he squats down, it takes about 5 hours off of his game. So through the course of a season, he's 2 to 3 years shorter of a career. So you either move him now or you hang on to him to develop pitchers, and he's going to be one of your future coaches. He hits enough home runs and stays healthy. He's your Hall of Famer. So anything can happen, but you take the blockbuster deals while you can, for sure.
Les Norman, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. We're talking about rebuilding, and I think you and I talked about this before, that when I look at the division, and that's the whole key, looking at your own division, Cleveland still has a good farm system, and it should be a contender this year. Minnesota is certainly ahead of the curve than the Royals, further along in regards to their talent. They made the wild card last year. They've regressed a little bit this year, which I think some people saw coming, but still I think are pretty talented next couple years. The White Sox and Tigers already, in my opinion, started the rebuild before the Royals did. I think they're ahead of the Royals when it comes to playing a whole bunch of young players. And the Royals have had, as we've talked about, not a deep farm system last couple of years. Part of that's through trades and going for it, which was the right thing to do, certainly. You won a World Series in 2015. But the Royals, when they went about the draft, they went predominantly with pitching, and they went predominantly with college players instead of high school players. Is that a matter of speeding up, one, the process, but also to keep up with the Joneses, because the Royals are already behind all those teams in the rebuilding process?
Well, I think the Joneses, you know, keeping up with the Joneses, I think that's more of it's just coincidental, mm-hmm. more than anything. I think that you're right that they did go with the college pitchers because they tend to develop a little faster. They've pitched with a little bit of pressure. That's why it's good for the two guys that pitch for Florida. It's good that they're going to the World Series so they can get a little bit of pressure under their belt before they start their careers. And the high school kids tend to obviously take longer for specific reasons, but it's rare that you get that one Bryce Harper type that in high school is almost already ready to play in the major leagues, the A-Rods. I remember playing against A-Rod in the minor leagues when I was trying to fight to get there, and here he was, the first-round pick that was probably only going to be in Jacksonville with the Mariners, you know, for 7 days, and he didn't look like an 18, 19-year-old kid. I remember catching a fly ball or a line drive in left field from A-Rod when he hit it, and I felt like I was catching a 16-pound shot put when it landed. You can tell he was special. Those guys are rare. And so, I think it was important in the message that the Royals wanted to give. They backed it up with college pitchers that are going to get ready quicker. Those rare guys are just so hard to find, and the Royals didn't get that because they had to pick so late. I mean, it was like 18, 34, 35, and 40. So within that first 10 guys is where you're going to find your superstar that's probably going to be in the big leagues in that first year.
When do you think realistically, what year are you targeting for the Royals to be serious contenders to win the division and get back into contention for a World Series championship?
Thank you for using the word realistically, because it takes the pressure off of me a little bit. you hear the Royals talk about 2020. It's obviously optimistic, and they have to be optimistic because it's a business, and they have to maintain their fan base. They've worked really hard to, they've won a couple World Series as this new generation of fan comes up. They've changed the radio booth, the TV booth, I mean. People loved Rex Hudler, hated Rex Hudler, and now the haters are turning into the likers, and the lovers have always loved him. So they've marketed this team in very genius of ways. They've been very successful at it, and so now they're going to have to back that up to keep this Gen Xer fan and this millennial fan and the baby boomer fan and all these different fans, but more to the new fan, to be able to contend. So I guess that's the long answer, but without saying a date, the short answer for me, they're saying 2020. I'm thinking 4 to 5 years. So at the earliest, I'm going to say 2022. I think legitimate 2023 to give these guys a chance to come up, to give other guys in free agency and trade that are veteran types, give them a chance to develop and to be able to get that mesh like they had when the Hosmers and the Moustakas and the Sal Perez's came up and just transitioned into the big leagues like it was no big deal.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've been thinking the same thing. 4 or 5 years from now, it might be longer, but that would be more realistic, which leads me to the next question then. Of the players that are on the Royals' 25-man roster right now, which ones do you think could be a key part of a team 4 or 5 years from now that's contending?
Well, you mean for the Royals team?
Yes, for the Royals. Soler would pop in my head, probably be one, perhaps.
Yeah, Soler is, I mean, they traded away Wade Davis to get him, and they've seen, that first year he was trying too hard, he was a little bit heavy, he was recovering from injury. I think now they've seen what he can do when he prepares himself. He's proven a little bit of a work ethic. He hasn't been as good as he was when he was super hot, but they see for an extended period of time what he can do. I think that would be a foolish thing in a rebuild because he's still young enough, he could be a major part of it. And then the other question would be a guy like Salvi, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's veteran enough, and he's had a good enough experience, but we have to wait and see, you know, again, is that blockbuster deal when some team wants Salvi, is it too good to pass up? And I think that other guy is probably Jake Junis on the pitching staff. I mean, he gives up too many home runs, but let's remember, he's learning on the fly. He's shown great success. He's got three pitches. He's got a wipeout pitch that is a swing and miss pitch. So with the right pitching coach, the right experience, you know, you take a guy like Junis, possibly Salvi, and definitely Jorge Soler, and that's a pretty darn good base for you guys, and then also for those guys, and then also wait and see what Hunter Dozier really is going to be. We don't know what he's going to be yet. We just know that he's got calm for a young guy. He's got that poise for a young guy like Junis did at the beginning of this season. So there's three, potentially those four guys. Everybody else I see is probably not going to be part of the future for whatever reason, mostly because the Royals are just going to let them go, save some money, and rebuild it.
I've talked about this, and it was early in the year, and they've had a couple things happen since then. But I really felt like at the beginning of the year and even a month into the season, when I hear people say the Royals are rebuilding, I didn't really buy that term. And the reason I didn't buy that term was I look at the starting nine, and I'm like, well, there's no young prospect that's getting a chance to play that's going to be a part of this future. You got the veterans at third and at short, and you've got Gordon in left and Salvi behind the plate. Now, Hunter Dozier would be one of those guys, as you mentioned, that perhaps could be one of the future players on a contending team 4 or 5 years from now. You're hoping that Mondesi, and they've got some younger talent, like you said, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years down the line, they can all come together and contend for a division championship and a World Series championship. But the one area that I thought they were maybe in rebuild mode before anything else was the bullpen. They went with some Rule 5 picks. Now Brad Keller's in the rotation. What are your thoughts on some of these younger guys they've had in the bullpen this year, and then Brad Keller specifically and what he's done as a starter?
Well, Brad Keller is a beast in every sense of the word, and I'm not just talking about body type. I mean, he's shown versatility. I'm still not convinced he's going to be a starter. I think he's a lockdown bullpen guy. I think eventually they'll see. I think if he gets any injury whatsoever this year, knock on wood, they're going to pull him back and let him be in that role. It's not a mistake to at least see what he can do, but in the lockdown, he was giving away nothing. Now as a starter, the scouting report changes. He's got to get through a second time in the order, and so that makes things just a little bit different. You know, a big guy that throws in the mid to upper 90s, eventually that's going to wear on a guy's arm and wear on his build. He's only 22, so he can take it a little bit, but look, you want a guy long-term. You got him in Rule 5. You got your lightning in a bottle. You better take care of your lightning in a bottle and not let any leaks come out. Now, a couple names that come into play that really probably will have a good future with the Royals. Josh Stalmont, who's in the minor leagues. He's now in the bullpen. Used to be a starter. He's touching 100 miles an hour. He's just got to get his walks under control. And anytime you throw and hit triple digits, you're going to be a little more wild. Kelvin Herrera knows that. Kelvin Herrera wasn't great with his 100 miles an hour until he developed that nasty changeup and a nasty curveball. Now it makes it harder to hit. And he went 2.5 months just the other night, 2 nights ago, was his first walk of the season. So I think that's pretty good. And then you've got a guy like Richard Lovelady, who Danny Duffy was talking about him yesterday. He's a young guy that has shown lights-out ability. So even though their farm system is weak, the Royals still have enough bullets in their existing farm system that they can come up and be part of this rebuild and not just compete but contend in the future. They just got a little bit of dust to rub off.
Talking to Les Norman, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Let's go back to the current team for just a quick moment. Put me in the clubhouse a little bit, and as a former player yourself, how do you go about approaching the game? I mean, you're supposed to be a professional. You're getting paid lots of money to play a game that some people would play for free if they were forced to. But your team is 22-46. The guys that are on the trade block, they know that they probably will be traded at some point. You got other guys on this team that probably have reason to be motivated to try to win a spot on the team for the future. Other guys that seem to be pretty solid in their positions, Soler, maybe Whit Merrifield. What's the morale, and how do you go about just doing your job when you're out of contention so early in the season the rest of the year? Do you become a little bit more selfish and go, okay, I know that I make more money if I hit more home runs or get more stolen bases? Or, I mean, take me through that morale and the thinking process on a team that's completely out of it already.
Well, let me ask you this question in response to that. If you're a guy that has the capability to hit 35 to 40 home runs, but your average is going to be 260, where if you work on your average being 300 and you hit 20 to 25 home runs, there's a really strong chance you're going to be traded. Your contract year's up. Would you not try to hit more? Because, look, when the Royals pay me, if I'm a Mike Moustakas and the Royals pay me $30 million, say,
mm-hmm.
am I giving any of that $30 million? Are they paying me and Whit Merrifield and Sal Perez as part of that money, or are they just paying me?
Mm-hmm.
Look,
right.
It is a clubhouse, and there's a way to go about your game. But you're negotiating, or your agent's negotiating contracts based on your market value, based on your potential, based on your draft position. And so I don't think it's selfish at all if you know you're going to be traded to change your game a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The Royals are 22 and 46. They're 24 games out, and they've barely played 60 games, almost, 70 games.
Right.
There's still over 90 games to go, and you know you're not going to be there for all 90. You know you're not going to contend. And so I don't see that as a selfish thing at all. But part of this, too, Wade, is this is a new generation of clubhouse. I talked with Danny about this yesterday. I talked with Hosmer about this 2 years ago. This generation has a clubhouse that is tightly knit no matter what. These issues back in the day, even back in my generation, you didn't talk about these kind of things. And I think because you didn't talk about these things, they weren't in the open. People didn't know how to handle it. So it was just assumed that, oh, you're supposed to be a teammate. And I think that created a lot more division.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying our Royals clubhouse was some major divide, but it wasn't exactly the wide open, everybody's the brothers kind of thing. You had people that hung out here and people that hung out here. I just had the honor of playing for guys like Mark Gubiza and Jeff Montgomery, who didn't stand for things like that. And they were professionals and did their own thing, but they also encouraged some of the younger guys that actually wanted to be encouraged and work hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that now. These guys are all brothers and friends. They're wide open. There's no secrets in there. And I think a lot of the other guys, whether young or old, they expect a guy like Mike Moustakas to be playing for a new contract and be playing for a new team because they know they're not going to be playing for a new team. And when the front office, through the media and through their own meetings, makes it well aware that, hey, we're on a rebuild, things are going to change, when you keep the issues that are normally elephants in the room out in the open,
mm-hmm.
and you talk about those things, then, hey, there are no secrets. I mean, that's one thing I even do in my marriage with my bride. I've been with her 21 years, married 21, with her 23. She's my best friend. When we have issues, we talk about them wide out in the open. So when something comes up, we deal with it and move on. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why we're still best friends. So the clubhouse will stay smooth. It is a business. It's not a brotherhood in the sense of, well, if you play for someone else, if you're on our team, you have to play for our team. Well, of course you do, but look, it's reality. They're adults. They're mature. They understand. And I think Dayton Moore has everything to do with that, with the culture he created when they originally signed him on to be the general manager.
So if as long as the effort's there, nobody would have a problem. Let's just give a hypothetical. Let's say that, Moose doesn't run out a ground ball, that he could have beat a double play or something. He's like, well, hey, I'm not going to pull my hammy. I got to be worried about myself in regards to, I'm a free agent at the end of the year. I'm at the end of my deal. Is that a little bit different, or do you just everybody understands where everybody's at? So, hey, if you don't run as hard on a certain ball, or you don't try and lay out to dive in center field so you don't jam up your shoulder, everybody's cool with that and understands that, or is that a different dynamic to what you're talking about?
Well, what you're mentioning right now is maybe one chink in the armor, but here's the situation with the Royals. Ned Yost is loyal, but he's loyal to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
Like the other night, for example, when Kelvin Herrera gives up his home run and then walks the guy, Salvi sees something that's unusual and different, and they think he's hurt, and the trainer comes out, and Ned Yost comes out. Well, what we find out is he wasn't hurt. The complaint was, well, the balls are too slick. Well, then find a way to make them unslick. There's no excuses. You go out there, and you do what you do. So Ned will loyally back his players, but sometimes it goes to the point where you're just rolling your eyes and say, well, I'm not going to go any further with these questions because we know what we're going to get. This generation of Royal, and Hosmer did this extremely well, when your own players are dogging it, there are guys in that clubhouse that won't let you get away with it. So whether Ned Yost would bench a guy or something like that, or whether he wouldn't, which he probably would not do, the players will handle it. I played for a AAA manager when I was with the Indians for a year, Brian Graham in Buffalo. He knew that we had a veteran enough team that if somebody did that, he wouldn't have to bench him because the players would take care of it, and that's why we ended up winning so many games in the AAA championship, because we knew what we all expected of each other. It was a professional clubhouse. That's what the Royals have, and you know, I just really see in this club that the players handle things like that so upper management doesn't have to. And I also think that that, again, comes from the culture and atmosphere that Dayton Moore has created, the accountability.
A couple more questions before we let you go. Les Norman, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. Ned Yost was talking about replay the other day. Of course, the key play in the game the other night turned things around. The ball game was a runner for the Reds. I think it was Billy Hamilton. Appeared to be out of the baseline. The umpires didn't call him out of the base pass. Ended up changing the whole complexion of the game, in essence. And Ned talked about how it's not a reviewable play, and he would have liked to have been reviewed, but he can't. What are your feelings on replay? Because to me, it's a Pandora's box. And I think we already opened the door on that long time ago. Once you replay or review certain plays, it's like, where do you stop? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if you're going to have replay, then replay everything. I mean, I know the strike zone, they're talking about going to that. I think that's your one area that there's the human versus the technology side of things. And, you know, I like them putting the box up there. And, you know, I've talked, Laz Diaz was a guy that I had all throughout the minor leagues. I'm still friends with Laz. I see him at the stadium every once in a while. And one of the things I'll always ask him is you know, tell me how you're doing with replay. Tell me what you guys think about it. What's going on? And there was one time Laz actually made an excuse. Oh, well, what you see is different. I'm like, Laz, come on, cut that out. Let's go. Just talk about it and be real with me. He's like, yeah, you know what? It's hard. It's really hard because, you know, technology is so accurate and we're not, but I don't know what people expect because our eyes are human. We don't have the ability just to listen and do what a computer says. But there are other areas, like out of the baseline. I think an out-of-the-baseline should be a reviewable play, whether it benefited or hurt the Royals. It's for any team, for any season. If you're going to call someone out-of-the-baseline or not out-of-the-baseline, you have to have stipulations on, okay, is it 5 feet outside the bag? Is it stepping in the grass in the baseline? Is it to avoid a tag a certain way? You have to get parameters set up, and if a replay shows the parameters were violated, then the guy is called out or safe, depending on those. So I don't think you should pick and choose, except for the strike zone. I don't think you should pick and choose what you can and can't be reviewable. People complain that, oh, it makes the game too long. Yeah, but it makes the game more accurate. And if he's safe, he's safe. If he's out, he's out. I asked Danny Duffy the same thing yesterday, and he's like, look, I don't mind if it was all computer-generated and there were no umpires behind home plate because, look, if that's a strike, I need to learn how to throw it there. If it's a ball, I need to learn how not to throw it there unless I'm trying to get a guy to chase. So, I think if you're in, be all in.
I'm with you on that. I think they could easily fix that play the other night, and that is if your foot hits the grass, it's just like the restricted circle in the NBA. You take a charge.
Right.
If your heel is on the circle, it's already the parameter's been set, then that's a block. You can go back and review it. Oh, his foot was outside the circle. Okay, we'll stick with the charge call. It's very clear. It helps the officials. I think they could do the same thing with that situation for the baseball umpires, don't you?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And I know the umpires want to hang on. It's a great paying job. You know, it's a good union for them and all those things. You notice that since replays come in, ejections have been a lot less. There's not so many of those crazy arguing fights that most fans love to see every now and then. And, you know, guys still do get kicked out just because they're frustrated. But, look, if you're trying to make the game have more integrity in the calls and, you know, umpires say they like it, I think some like it, some don't like it because it makes them look bad when they mess up. But stop messing up as best as you can. And, you know, if you're going to do it, just do it.
I'm with you. All right, time for an off-the-wall question. If you could swap places with anyone for one day, who would that person be?
I would say, without even thinking about it, the first thing that came to mind, so I'm going to go with that one, and it's not giving away my political affiliation. All I'm saying is that I would want to swap positions with the President of the United States for one day. And the reason is because I would want to know what it's like to be under fire for every blink, every press, every word you say. I would probably stay off of Twitter, of course, but
yes.
I would just want to see what that would be like because I know by the end of the day, I would be really happy that it was only one day I had to do it.
Yes, I would agree with you on that. I thought you might say you might want to swap places with Kevin Morosis, because, you know, Kevin is having a birthday as we record this today, so then you could have this big birthday cake. So if you could swap places one day, you just go ahead and do that today because it's his birthday.
But isn't he like 85 or something like that? No, Kevin's 95. Well, look,
close.
I don't want to swap
close.
With Kevin because, yeah, close. But, you know, Kevin's a great guy. He's a great family guy. He's a great community guy. He does so much for so many people. I don't want to be selfish and swap on his special day. I want him to be able to enjoy his special day with his family and friends.
Well, by the way, he looks great for 85. I mean, he is just
tip-top
shape, man. Baseball will do that and running around after kids as well. Les, tell everybody how they can hear your show. You're there at 810 WHB in Kansas City, and your show is a little bit different than a lot of the sports talk shows in Kansas City.
Yeah, it is. It's about different stories in sports, positive messages. We even got some entertainment people coming on. Interestingly enough, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, and so I had my 80s metal and all my 80s music that I still love to listen to. So based on some work ethic and some new projects he's got coming up, I'm interviewing Dee Snider, former frontman of Twisted Sister. He's coming up, which is a really cool interview. But and really looking forward to it. But the best part, because, you know, people out in Beloit and all the other areas, it may be tough to pick up. So the best place for me, in that way you can adjust and don't have to be on time, is just my website, lesnorman.com. It's 1S. You can go to the radio page. There's tons of podcasts on there, tons of cool and different stories, different guests. But, yeah, that's the best way. It's easy to download or listen to. It's hanging out on the cloud up there. So anytime you want to listen, you can go there.
Fantastic. Hey, we appreciate your time as always. Have a terrific summer. Stay cool. And we'll talk to you again maybe at the end of the season and diagnose what the Royals have done going into next year.
Absolutely. We may need to hit up some July trade deadline.
Well, that's true. We could do that.
Yeah. I got a feeling there's going to be some interesting things happen. So I'm all for it, buddy.
That sounds good. We'll talk to you then. Take care, Les.
You got to wait. Thank you.
That's Les Norman, our guest today on The Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs.